It's the International Women in Film Podcast with your host, Michelle the Trainer. MTT is Michelle the Trainer.
Aloha and welcome to episode 16 of the International Women in Film Podcast. Today's very special guest star is Dawn Higginbotham, who is an award-winning writer, director, and producer. She's a member of the Producers Guild of America, SAG-AFTRA, hashtag We Are Witty, W-I-T-I, and The New Hollywood. Her directorial debut, The Usual, was an official selection at Festival de Cannes, American Pavilion Emerging Filmmakers, and screened at Short's Corner at the Cannes Market, as well as many others, with producers Sharon Davis, Renee O'Connor, and Kamari Bakru. She is currently in development with the feature films Passing Through for Cordova Pictures with co-owner producer Brooke P. Anderson, Shanghai Nirvana, and Sleepers with Sharon Davis, Bill Kilgore, and Richard Liu, and is in the midst of packaging Fatherhood, working with the same team. She's producing the project and is set to direct. Originally from Memphis, Tennessee, Dawn moved to New York to study music theater and film at AMDA. She got her career start as a musical theater performer in several off-Broadway shows and a national tour. She soon shifted her sights to film, where she worked in production on numerous feature films, including Die Hard with a Vengeance, John McTiernan, James Cameron's Titanic, The Thin Red Line, Terrence Malick, and Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, Terry Gilliam. Dawn's background also includes VFX on the films Godzilla and Armageddon, and post-production, and as a manager for Dolby Laboratories, working with various filmmakers and studios, and as a post-production supervisor for Lucasfilm / THX. She worked alongside various labs in LA, Canada, UK, Italy, and Australia, overseeing film print quality on Star Wars Episode 1, 2, and 3 for George Lucas. She also worked on a variety of other projects for major studios, DreamWorks, Fox, Paramount, and Disney. Dawn has written several screenplays, including Off the Ledge, starring Brooke P. Anderson, The Perfect Host and Lost, and Andrew Pignon, Singled Out, who co-wrote the film, Zosia Mehmet from HBO Girls, Jenny Mullen, Nectar Rose, and Anne Ramsey, League of Their Own, Diamond and Gun, starring Renee O'Connor and Ted Raimi, and the upcoming Passing Through from Cordova Pictures. She's produced several distributed feature films and projects, including Diamonds and Gun, Off the Ledge, Knight of Templar, my personal favorite because Norman Reedus was in it, You Are a Star, Outside My Window, Randy Crowder's Infinity, we spoke a lot about that, it's amazing, Words Unspoken, and is in development on the upcoming Road to Nowhere, Single, Not Desperate, etc., with writer-creator Julian Moses and Midnight Move Productions. She also went on to direct Last Chance, starring and executive produced with Renee O'Connor, and executive produced by Sharon Davis, and The Hub, starring Brandon Gibson, Paul McKinney, Derek Brady, Raymond O'Connor, and with the executive producer Sharon Davis. DreamWorks 3D Animation with Valerie Laterra-Spletzer, and is currently in editing on her latest documentary series, hashtag WeFilmLA, about women filmmakers in all films from all walks of life, diverse and passionate about their craft, working in Los Angeles. I love Dawn. I love this interview. I love her body of work. I know and am dear friends with a lot of the people that she's worked with. She's amazing. I hope you enjoy the interview as much as I did. And I want you to have just an epic, amazing day. Thank you. Aloha and welcome to the International Women in Film Podcast. Today's very special guest star is Dawn Higginbotham. Did I say that right, Dawn?
You did.
Woohoo!
Good job.
Dawn, I've had the pleasure of meeting Dawn years ago in Los Angeles at wonderfully large events. And Dawn, I want to hear everything about how you got started in film because you have some amazing stories to share with us.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, let's see if I can remember back that far. I actually got started, funny enough, in musical theater. I was performing doing tours and working off Broadway. And I started as an actress and singer and just went out on auditions and did everything I could. And I slowly started getting more curious about the film side of things. And I started doing extra work to make a few extra bucks on the side. And my roommate sort of got me into that. And one day I was on set. I was working on a movie, a little tiny, low budget independent film called Die Hard with a Vengeance. And
At
I
Warner
started,
Brothers or at Fox?
oh no, this was back in New York. We were on location and we were filming down in Wall Street, kind of where all there was like this massive intersection of all these roads or streets that came together. And we were down near Wall Street and we were blowing up a subway station. And I was one of the victims on the subway station. And so I have all these pictures of me just covered in soot and ash and all this stuff. And my roommate and I would, he was a cop on it, and we would have to ride the subway back at the end of the night, and he in his cop uniform and me just looking like a homeless person, just covered in dirt and all kinds of wonderfulness. And we just had such a blast. We did that for a couple of weeks. And I knew that the extra work was going to wrap up pretty quickly. And I started just talking to other people on the set. And I'm like, what do you do? What is that? What is a production assistant? What is an assistant director? And I was so inquisitive and I was so curious about what everybody was doing. And we were working a lot with the stunt team and I met the director and it was a really just one of those environments where you felt like you could just talk to people and ask questions and be inquisitive. So one of the ADs took me under his wing and said, look, why don't you come back tomorrow? I'll get you on as a set PA and I'll just walk you through the ranks. So I showed up the next day and he put me to work. I was blocking off streets in New York City and getting yelled at by all the New Yorkers. And it was a blast. I ended up on the film for like 3 months, just doing everything, working with the stunt team, working with the first unit, and just having a blast and learning the ins and outs of being on set. And then from there, I worked on various different projects. I did a lot of Law and Order back in New York. Everyone knows that Law and Order pretty much put food on everyone's table, I think, for a lot of actors during that time. Work was sort of drying up in New York, so I decided I was going to give LA a shot. And this was, I think, around 95, 96. I just packed everything up and moved out to LA and started getting every and any job I could. I worked as a started off as a production assistant on several different movies and just kept just trying to find that next job. And one of the big films that I ended up on was Titanic, working for Jim Cameron and for Lightstorm Entertainment. And I actually started as a production assistant and was working with the coordinator, who was amazing, and the UPM, and got to know a lot of the folks on Titanic, and ended up somehow by the end of it working as an additional assistant to Jon Landau, who was one of the main producers on the film. So it was a really amazing learning experience, and because we were going back and forth between LA and Mexico, I learned a lot about both working here and there, and a lot of about producing, just kind of watching John and in action. It was an incredible experience, and I was on that film for over a year, and I've never worked on a film that long before. And then from
But
there,
that's
I
like the film to work on if you're going to
oh
work on
right
something. Yeah, they had that set up like south of Rosarito, right? And a little bit north of
yes
Ensenada.
yeah
Yeah,
yep
I spent a lot of time that way and I used to just watch it, that's the little studio they built.
I know, it was incredible what they built down there. To see it in action and to watch Jim directing is like nothing else. I mean, he just knows everything and he knows exactly what he wants from every single moment. And it was such a great learning experience. And to show up on set and just see this tilt-a-whirl, this tilt-a-deck that they had that was mocked up to be the bow of the ship and how it tilted up and all the stunt people were attached to it and they would go falling down the bow of the ship
Was
and
it in the water?
no, this was actually built outside on a, you know, just on a regular deck, and it wasn't in the water. They did have one of the largest water tanks, I think, you know, at the time. And they did have, you know, all the actors in like, you know, suits. And then they had their wardrobe on top of these swimsuits, or these diving suits. And they would be in that nasty water for hours. I was like,
it's cold. It's not that nasty. It's cold.
Oh, no, man. I felt for those guys. You don't know. I mean, some of that crew was in there, I'm sure, for hours. And who knows what's going on in there. I don't want to know. But it was, I mean, definitely, it was a really crazy experience to sort of witness and kind of check it all out. Be a fly on the wall, really. Because, you know, you have responsibilities, but you're still in that learning phase. So everybody knows you're still, you know, kind of coming up, but but you get a chance to learn too.
Those are amazing projects. There's a lot of stress that comes with epic projects. You worked on some other amazing stuff too.
I had the good fortune of working with the visual effects team on Armageddon, which was a blast. And
what is a visual effect?
Visual effects is something that is either created in, you know, on set as a practical effect, or it's, you know, shot in front of a green screen, or, you know, shot in, you know, with the knowledge that they're going to add something to it later, you know, where we did a lot of models, you know, where we were blowing up like spaceship, you know, little mini spaceships with like Bruce Willis's head in there. And, you know, there was like all kinds of, I got to paint green screens, and it was so fun and just such a great environment to work in, because everyone's so amped up. It's so techy and everyone's so creatively juiced up because they want to, you know, create the next big thing. And it's Armageddon, so it's futuristic, and there's all these automobiles and spaceships and things that they're creating. And it was so much fun.
That's
and
totally then, fun.
Ironically, I mean, I guess I worked on a few other films in between, like Fear and Loathing and Las Vegas. So I got
Johnny. Did you work with Johnny?
Well, I've met him a couple of times in the office. I mostly worked in the office. I wasn't in Vegas, but I did get to meet and, you know, have a little crossover with Terry Gilliam, which was, I mean, come on, really.
Cool.
And Thin Red Line, same thing with Terrence Malick and being in. I didn't travel with them. I was in the office, but just being like getting to meet him and just seeing how these things are put together and these massive movies and seeing how these directors work. It was just really, really cool. And to see a different side of it, like Titanic, I spent a little more time sort of back and forth between office and set. Armageddon, I was always on set, but to be sort of on the office side and sort of coordinating and working with the production managers and just kind of really seeing the other side of it, it gives you a little bit more. You know, when you're going into producing, you want to know every aspect of a film. Like, you really want to learn everything there is to know about being involved in a film. You want to know what the positions are. You want to know what the costs are. You want to know, I mean, and you see those things, especially when you're working in the office. You really get to look at the books and you see what a budget looks like, and you start to learn what that, you know, how to put that together and what a schedule looks like and how to do a one-line schedule and, you know, just those type of things that I really started to pick up on, and that helped me when starting to figure out how I was going to go into producing and creating my own content. So from, oddly enough, the last film I worked on was actually Armageddon. And the first film I worked on in post-production for a totally different company, I went on to work for Lucasfilm, THX at the time, was Armageddon. So I, you know, we finished the film, and I go in and I'm working for this little division of Lucasfilm called TAP. And at the time it's like the theater alignment program. And we would go in and we would QC content for directors and producers and, you know, and studios, and we would work on behalf of them. We QC content, and these films would get released and, you know, try to maintain quality on the film so that color density and the quality of the film remains what the director had envisioned. And it was this big deal at the time. And Lucasfilm is so amazing to their, I mean, they were so incredible to their employees.
And
so
this was at a different location, right? We talked about that, because
right,
they've
right.
moved.
Yeah. So Lucasfilm initially, the ranch, which I believe is still there, the house and the ranch and the vine, the vineyard and everything is still up in Marin County. They've since moved down to the Presidio. And then they sold to Disney. So they're now a Disney company. But at the time, I was actually working out of Burbank. And we had a Burbank office down here that THX and
Cap
ran out of. But we were always invited to the picnics and the gatherings up at the ranch. And you're sitting there with George Lucas at his barbecue for the 4th of July. And Francis Ford Coppola. And here's Francis Ford Coppola, who brought all his wine for the 4th of July party. And you're looking around, you're like, how did I get invited to this? You know, and he is so great about, he's so inclusive, I think, or at least the company was inclusive. At the time, it just felt like one big family. I mean, everybody was invited to everything, and they were so great. ILM used to, on Halloween, have this wonderful Halloween party at, up in south side of San Francisco, and everyone went out all out. I mean, people were spending years on their costume. You would not believe some of the costumes that showed up for this Halloween party. And it was just such an incredible experience. Again, George is walking around saying hi to the employees and shaking hands and being just, you know, like he's one of the guys. And it was just so crazy. I'm like, this is surreal. I don't know if I can handle this. I grew up, Star Wars was one of my favorite films. You know, Raiders of the Lost Ark was one of my favorite films. And here I am standing next to this guy who created everything. And I'm just like blown away. So it was really a unique experience and something I will never forget. It was just so incredible. And yeah, and it was just ironic that that it all came full circle. I got to work in production on the film and then see it get completed to its full potential on the post side of it. So it was really kind of really
that's cool hilarious, experience. Really.
And then, of course, I got to work on all the Star Wars films, episode 1 through episode 3.
Wow, and, really?
Yeah, so that was great. And we were all involved in a lot of the host coordination side on episode 1 through 3. That was an experience. I mean, I don't think we slept a lot during a lot of that time. And then from there, I went on to work for Dolby and post-production for Dolby and managed content for several different studios through them. And then I moved into producing. And I was actually, I produced one or two films before I started working for Dolby, kind of in between the gap. And then while working for Dolby, I produced a couple of shorts and just like some, you know, music videos and some different content. After that, after Dolby, I went on to, you know, really kind of dive into the producing and creating, building up my own company and really starting to figure out the IP and how to really build up a slate of projects versus kind of relying on one by one type of thing.
Yeah. So you did with Renee O'Connor some projects.
Yes, Renee and I have worked together for over 10 years now, and we've been, it's been such a great partnership. We met on a film called Diamonds and Guns, and that was a feature film that I wrote and produced, and then Renee came on as a producer and as an actress, and was incredible to work with. She is so prepared, unbelievably prepared. And the way she understood the script and knew going into it, I was like, we're going to keep working together. I know somehow we're going to keep working together.
That's cool.
And you know, you come across those partnerships that you just, they don't end, you know, they just, you know, you got to keep working with that person because yeah, it's super cool. And especially when you wrote something and you know, someone cared that much that they really put the time into it to really understand. And, you know, in Diamonds and Guns, it's a comedy. It's a romantic comedy, but there's a little Shakespeareanness to it, you know, where it's sort of like this modern day take on that sort of awkward love story where things just aren't working out, and really wanted to sort of homage to the old like 60s romantic comedies, you know, where it's sort of bumbling and goofball and everything. And, but Renee really like, you know, she gets into the characters and she wants to understand, and she'll ask you, you know, every question about the character and about the story and about the other characters and how they support each other. And it really is a great, it's so great to get to know somebody who cares that much about the content, whether it's theirs or whether it's somebody else's. And I've seen her do that with the other projects that we've done together over the years. You know, she had Words Unspoken, which was a short film that she wrote and directed. And that was another really wonderful experience because I got to learn from her on the directing side of things. You know, we showed up and because we had worked on it from the get-go, I really got to see her preparation method and how she approaches a film as a director and, you know, trying to direct and act and be a producer on something. It's a lot. It's a lot of responsibility. So it's really amazing to see how they compartmentalize and split those things up and how they prep for each one. Since then, I've worked for several actor, producer, directors where, you know, Off the Ledge was that type of situation. I produced Off the Ledge with Brooke Anderson and Andrew Pignon, and they were both actors in the film, and Brooke also directed the film.
Wow.
So once we get to set, it has to be, you have to be able to support Brooke as a director, and you have to be able to support Brooke and Andy as actors. And you can't, of course, they're producers and they're still involved in the producing side of things. But Brooke and I did everything in our power to make sure that the film was so prepped and ready to go that once we stepped on set, I could take on that responsibility on my own. And I would go to her for producerial type of things. But I tried to limit it as much as possible because I need her to focus and get the shots done that she needs. And we were filming on a really limited schedule. I mean, we had I think we had 9 days and it was an ensemble piece and it was a ton of pages and we were shooting 13, 15 pages a day and just trying to cruise through the material. And you want to give the time that you know, she needs to be devoted to the actors and she needs to be devoted to the writing and to the directing. She can't be, you know, worried about what's going on with craft service or what's going on with this piece of equipment that didn't show up or, you know, that type of thing, or the location's coming apart or whatever.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, you really learn how to balance all of that. And it's tough. It's not easy. And, you know, we had the same thing with Knight of the Templar. You know, I came on my friend Paul Sampson.
This is my favorite one to talk about, and you know why.
well, yes. So, you know, Paul came on to, he wrote and directed it, and it's a really niche, very...
Paul Sampson.
Yes, Paul Sampson. He's amazing. And he was...
Okay.
So it stars Paul Sampson and your favorite person, Norman Reedus. And I'll talk about that in a second, because that's another whole other story. That's
yay.
Awesome.
Okay.
But that was just such a crazy experience because, you know, Paul is writing and directing and producing. And so, you know, we get to set and it is horses and knights of the round, you know, knights of the Templar, and they've got the costumes and the swords, and you're worried about the stunts and people not getting killed.
Oh, no. Like,
you know, and you're trying to be safety conscientious, but then you've got, you know, you're shooting at night and you've got all these huge lights and you're
because
out.
It's the Knight of Templar, right?
Right. and it was just insane. I do not know how we pulled. I still to this day, I don't know how we did that, but I think there was I have to really hand it to Sampson for being, again, it's all about preparing and being prepared and going into it prepared. And as an actor, he was he was getting everyone filmed and he would save his stuff for the last because he's directing everybody. He's more worried about getting everyone else's scenes done. And by the time he gets to a scene, he's hoarse. He has no voice. So he's saying these lines like super raspy and super deep and dark, but it actually really works for his character because he's this sinister kind of guy who's coming back for vengeance. And who is he coming back for vengeance on? You know, bring it to modern day. And, you know, and you've got this group of this ensemble group, including Norman Reedus, who is just awesome and, you know, such a great person to work with and just such a character and just really makes it easy. I think he really made it. And well, and he and Paul are buddies. They met, I think, a while before that film on another film that they did together. And Norman was kind enough to come in and help Paul out on this film. And it's such a cult movie. It is so bizarre. It's such a weird horror, scary kind of oddball movie. And it is the last film that David Carradine did. It's that I believe that it is the last film that David Carradine did. Really, it's amazing to see all these guys in this sort of genre. It was so much fun and such a crazy experience in putting that together. So it, yeah.
I am such a believer in following the fun. Okay, so now let's follow the Dawn director producer path here. So you produced Words Unspoken with Renee O'Connor and Jed Sura. And that's where you met Randy Crowder.
Right. And Randy, at the time, Renee, I think he was friends with Jed, and he came in to play the father in Words Unspoken and was so amazing. He's such a talented actor. I love Randy. We all had such a great time working on Words Unspoken, and it was just such a great camaraderie. I got to know Randy and Jeanette a good bit. And when Randy decided he was going to take on producing and writing his own project and directing his own project, you know, he had called Jed and Renee initially and was talking to them about it. But I think they, again, they knew that they needed another producer on set that could just be a step back from, you know, directing and acting and could handle all the additional things that were going to come up. So Randy called and asked if I would come on and help him out with Infinity, which was another really incredible experience. The film is really tough. It's a really, really tough movie, and it's tough material. And I wanted to help in any way I could. I'm so proud of Randy for not sort of shying away from the difficulties of, you know, of the story he was trying to tell. I mean, he really went for it.
So yeah, so let me, so Randy Crowder wrote, right? And you were a producer, Jeanette O'Connor's producer, and Renee O'Connor, actually not related.
No relation.
Yeah, not no relation. Renee O'Connor is the lead actress. I saw the film and it was an amazing, poignant short. It was such an amazing story about PTSD, and it was timely.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah, it really deals with, I think, subject matter, it's becoming more and more discussed, I think, because of some of the social issues and some of the violence that's happening. I think that it has become a more topical issue. It used to not be talked about at all. Like, it was almost like an embarrassment if you even tried to figure, and a lot of people didn't even understand what PTSD was years ago. I think they thought
that movie will school you.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And Jed Sura, I mean, come on, he was incredible in the movie, and he just, it was so heartbreaking to see this guy, you know, go through that process and then do what he does in the movie. And then to see, I think he also speaks to what someone goes through when you think they're sort of tuned out in their head. What Renee's character goes through, I don't want to give away the ending, but there's this situation that she ends up in where it speaks to these people that you think are in this sort of comatose state. But
because they're sort of like not communicating. They're not communicating.
Right. They're still experiencing something. And there's still something going on there that is keeping that part of their brain alive. And it's horrifying. Like, that to me was such part of the horrifying twist of the story.
It was sort of the silence and the non-communication between, it's a story about a husband and wife, you know, a family that is going through some PTSD stuff.
Yeah,
because it just goes to show that we don't really know what's going on between somebody's ears.
Right. And it's not as simple as good guy, bad guy. You know, it's not as simple as they're just a bad person. It's more complicated. You know, people are coming back just not right. And however that's happening, whether they were having mental instability before that happened or before they went off to fight, or they're coming back somehow changed, you know, I don't know what the answer is there, but there's obviously some issues still present in that and still happening there. It's a really, really dark, twisted story. It actually, you know,
and it's a short, so it's a very short,
right?
Dark,
and you have to get through
story.
That with and get your sort of get through that. And
I came out of that theater very changed.
Oh, yeah. In a very limited amount of time. I don't even know how he was able to do that. It felt very Twilight Zone to me. That's when I, like, when I initially read the story, I was like, God, this is so Twilight Zone, Outer Limits with a, you know, with a cause behind it. And it reminded me of that because, you know, Outer Limits was a very limited time frame you had to tell a story in, and Twilight Zone was a little like that. And they would hit you with these like really twisted endings or really timely issues, you know, and that's what this felt like to me. It felt like a, you know, like I should see a Twilight Zone thing appear above it.
It was bold. It was very bold. I'm fortunate to know most of the people involved in that film, and I was just so impressed and blown away that it's powerful storytelling.
Yeah.
Powerful.
It really is. And I think Randy really, I mean, not to speak for him, but I think that he more wanted to say, let's be aware that there's issues out there, and let's be aware of the things that people go through that we don't understand. I certainly don't, you know, that we're still trying to learn about and to be sympathetic and empathetic to, but not so much to say like, these guys are bad, or this is bad, or you should hate this, or you should be against it. I don't think it was a political thing. I think it was more of a
an awareness.
And I have this really important story I need to tell as a filmmaker. I have this message I want to get out there. And I know it was really important to Randy.
It was very, very well told.
Well, and really well acted. I mean, Renee and Jed are phenomenal together, and they just have this amazing ability to go into that mode and to build that combativeness and that anger and fear between the two of them. And it just worked so beautifully in the film. And it's hard to see your friends go to that place as actors, because it takes a lot to get there, and every actor has their own process, but holy cow, you know, to see your friends who you're like hanging out 1 minute at craft service with, and you're like, you know, shooting the crap with, and then the next minute they're freaking out and they're running after each other with knives, and it's like, whoa, what happened? You know, and it's a really interesting and scary process to watch on the outside.
And then right after that, I think you weren't at the screening I was at, because you might have already been in Cannes.
Oh, yeah, I decided, I was working in post-production, and I decided one day, I think I had my own, I think I was inspired by Renee and Randy actually a bit, because I had a story I wanted to tell, and I was inspired by them as directors and watching their process. But I was also inspired in a, you know, a more deep level with these like events that were going on in the world. And I was sitting there listening to the news, and it was just all bad. And at the time I wrote this short film, Newtown had just happened, and it really, really affected me. And I wanted to say something so badly, and I didn't know what to say. It's like, how do you talk to that kind of hurt and that kind of pain? And how do you empathize with what these people must be? I mean, there's no way you can even begin to understand what these people are going through. And there was so much of this sort of stuff happening in the news, and it was just constantly bad news. I just wanted to put something positive, and it was hokey, and it was silly, but I wanted to say something positive, and I wanted to put that message out into the world just so that it was there. And it was okay if nobody saw it. It was okay if it just got to a few festivals. It was okay if it didn't, you know, do anything big. I just wanted to say that. I just wanted to tell the story. And so taking a cue from Randy and Renee and them wanting to tell their stories, I just set out to do that. I decided, I wrote the script, and then about 6 months later, started kind of formalizing and figuring it out. And it was so incredibly hokey as some modern day tale that I was like, I don't know how to do this. So a few months later, I'm still working through it, and I finally figure it out. I'm like, I'm going to tell this as a period piece. I'm going to set this in the 1930s. And I'm going to tell this story as like an old time kind of, you know, homage to the Great Depression. So I went and watched a bunch of movies of that era and just sort of got myself into that era. I just dove into that era and started studying it a bit, and then really fleshed out the script, called up my buddy Renee. I said, hey, you know, I really want to do this, and I want to tell this story. Will you help me out? And she was kind enough to come on board and was so instrumental in really nailing that character, because it's a tough character. The character that she plays in this film is not the most likable. And she is kind of she's the mechanism of the story. So yeah, I started putting together, it's the film called The Usual. And I just called every friend, every available contact that I had, every favor I ever needed to call in, I called in. And it just came together. It was like once I made that decisive move to do it, everything started falling into place. 2 days before we get ready to shoot, one of my locations falls through. And we only had 2 locations, so that tells you how important that was. And one of the actors falls through. The lead actor falls through.
Wow.
So I'm freaking out because the actor that I had lined up was like stuck on the East Coast doing a TV series. Got extended, and it was great for him. It was awesome. But so I'm like, oh, my God, what am I going to do? And my friend Andy from Off the Ledge calls me up, and he's like, hey, do you mind if I give the script to a friend, Mackenzie Aston? You know, we just did this project together and I think he'd be great. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Freaking yeah, I love Mackenzie. So he gives the script to Mackenzie. He's like, okay, great. I already gave it to him. He loves it and he wants to do it. I was like, what? So I call up Mackenzie and we have this 2-hour conversation on the phone and we talk through the character and he asks me every question there is and he really, really connects with the character and we really get to the nitty gritty of it. And he comes on board and it was one of the most amazing shoots I've ever been on. It was one of the most incredible camaraderie situations. You know, once we all got to set, there was this synergy and this energy and people were just flowing and ebbing and we got it done. It was just, I had a beautiful DP, Darone Keat, who shot the film on a C300 and he made it somehow look like 35mm black and white, or, you know, part of it's black and white. And then we've got, you know, the color that, and we really went for these vivid golds and vivid deep colors to kind of give that era, you know, that sense of the 1930s. And it's sort of on the back end of the Great Depression, and it's about this wealthy couple who thinks they're untouchable by circumstances, and they don't think that they could ever be touched by poverty. So they're sort of tuned out to the poverty situation around them, and you see them in their wealth, and you see them entertaining themselves, and you see them living this lavish life. And treating these people not so wonderfully. And then in the end, they end up in that predicament because back in the Great Depression, it did make its way to the wealthy. It did find its way to the more well-established people and it shut down businesses it's not what I think people expected it to be. They thought, okay, well, the poor will just stay poor and the rich will stay rich. And it really did hit people hard. And so to see this wealthy couple now on the streets begging for money and they get help from one of the people that they disregarded. And it's really a message about paying it forward and looking out for your fellow human being and turning the other cheek. There's sort of a lot mixed in there, but it's mostly about let's take care of each other. Let's look out for each other. You know, let's be respectful and kind. You know, we don't know what each other's circumstances are. We don't know where we're going to end up. We don't know where they came from, but we got to take care of each other. We're on this world together. And that's really what I wanted to say. I really wanted to get that out there. So we finished the film, sent it out to a few festivals, and we're very fortunate that people really responded well to it. I was sitting at my desk. I'm still working in post-production. I'm sitting at my desk one day and I get a call from this woman and she's like, you know, we want to let you know that we love your film and we'd like to include it in this program for Cannes. And I was like, what? And like, wait a minute, what? And she's calling from Santa Monica. So I'm thinking it's some kind of affiliation, like, maybe they're going to show some movies in Santa Monica, but they're going to call it like the Cannes Santa Monica Film Festival or something. And it's actually this company called, or this organization, American Pavilion And they run emerging filmmakers competitions every year, and they bring in first-time directors, and they bring their films, and they have a certain amount of films that they can bring over. And she's trying to explain all this to me, and it's just going in one ear, out the other. And I'm like, yeah, that sounds amazing. Great. Okay, wonderful. And I'm stunned. I'm just sitting there like, surely she doesn't mean France, not Cannes, France, you know?
Not Cannes, right?
And I said, so you'll let me know where this is happening? And she goes, in Cannes. And I said, France? You know, like, or what? And she says, are you doing, like a special screening here for this? And she goes, no, dear, you're going to France. I think she was like, I'm going to get through to you at some point here. And finally, you know, it did make the breakthrough, but we were laughing over it. And I was
that's
like,
hilarious.
Holy cow. I never would have thought.
I was so excited when you were there. It was so fun to see all your photos and everything.
Fun. Such a blast. We had such a great time. And we went with a big group. Renee came with me, and the producers, Kamari Bakaru and Graf Allen, and a few of the other producers came. And Sharon Davis, who is a 2-time Academy Award nominee, was kind enough to, you know, to help us out as a producer on the film. She also brought in a costume designer for us and kind of oversaw a little bit of what was going on. And we had gotten to know each other as friends, and she came on board as a favor. She wasn't able to make it to Cannes with us, but because she's been on these just massive, huge films, but she was kind enough to produce the film with us. Then she lent us a costume designer who ends up is Courtney Hoffman, who went on to do the costume designing for The Hateful Eight for Quentin Tarantino. So we really, really got lucky with the costume design on our film, on The Usual. And the set design, oddly enough, was my mom. My mom came on.
How cool is that?
I know. How great is that? And she's not even really in the business so much, but we started talking about the look and what we wanted. And she just worked with me, and we got it set up. We made it happen. She did all of the food. She did all of the food that's on screen, and she did all of the catering and the craft service for the crew.
Nice.
And they have never eaten better. I mean, people were trying to eat the set food, and we're like, don't eat the food that's on. That stuff's been sitting out for 2 days. Do not eat that. You're going to die. But she did do the catering and the craft service for the crew, and they just loved it. I mean, it was just incredible, and she was amazing. And I was so thankful and grateful to be able to have that experience working with my mother, who also got to go to Cannes with us.
Nice. That's so cool.
Yeah. So it was really just a wonderful, well-rounded experience.
That is so far out. And then you have a company. Did you start your company before or after The Usual?
I started the company because of The Usual.
Perfect.
Needed to come up with a side company. I have a company called Cordova Pictures with Brooke Anderson. We produce Off Ledge through, and we have a couple other projects that are brewing through that company. But I needed something that was solely mine that I, you know, for these side projects that I was doing on my own. So I came up with Morning Person Pictures because it's sort of a play on my name, but it's also ironic because I am so not a morning person. It was just kind of a funny, you know, take on that.
I love it.
People are like, oh my gosh, I love that. I don't sort of figuring out the branding, and you know, we're building up the intellectual property part of it. And I'm really trying to kind of wrap my head around the branding. I think that'll happen as our films start to develop and as more happens. And I'm really, really happy to say that The Usual just got 2 offers for distribution. So we're hoping, from what I'm hearing, there should be a release by maybe late August or early September, maybe somewhere in there. And I will be able to do like a mass announcement once.
That's in 2016, listeners, just in case. Just in case you're listening to this 20 years from now, you'll know what we're talking about.
Right. And it is worldwide too. So hopefully, you know, some of Renee's fans that are world globally that I've been talking to on Facebook and Twitter and whatnot, they'll be able to see the film. I just wanted to get to as many people somehow as possible. I think that it's a good message. It's a timely message. So the quicker and the more globally we can get it, I think would be the better.
Well, that's why we're international. The International Women in Film.
Yay.
So what else do you have under Morning Person Pictures?
Well,
anything in development?
Yeah, we've got several projects in development and prep. Got a film called Fatherhood that's a family story, you know, fathers and father figures. And we're aiming for the fall, for a fall shoot. And we have a film called Shanghai Nirvana that is...
Fun name.
Oh, yeah, that's awesome. I have been developing that with a couple of producers, Bill Kilgore and Richard Liu, and we're working on a few projects as hopeful co-productions with China. You know, we've been working with companies out of Shanghai, been working with a couple of people out of Beijing and in between. So we're just talking to a lot of people. Bill's been traveling a lot to China to meet people and to discuss opportunities. And so it's really exciting. Like, it's exciting to start looking at the ability to work not just in the US, but globally. You know, we have people that we've been sort of speaking to and working with in Europe. So it's great to sort of globalize this. We're hoping that this will kickstart this year and we'll be able to kind of push those projects out. In the meantime, I'm sort of branding Morning Person and building up the projects. I've also got a film that I'm working on independently called The Bluff with a couple of people. I'm developing a TV project with Renee.
Is it like The Sting or is it like The Beach?
It's like The Beach. Okay. It's a little bit of The Sting where there is a little bit of, you know, bluffing going on.
You're pretty wordsmithy like that.
I
love that. I love that.
But it's actually, I grew up in Memphis, Tennessee, and there's the Bluff runs along the Mississippi River. And I wrote this story a long time ago and I've just revamped it and sort of polished it, made it more, you know, now. And there's this really amazing, downtown Memphis is incredible and it's just got such history to it. But there's this, you know, beautiful bluff that runs along the Mississippi River. I want to do a movie back home. I want to bring a movie back there. So I wrote this like action.
Well, I've never been there, so I didn't know there was a bluff there. Now if I go there, I'm going to have to go look for the bluff.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
You got to go.
Yeah, Mississippi Bluff. It runs along there and to Mississippi, and Mississippi and, you know, Arkansas are pretty connected. They're right there on the border of Memphis. It's just a totally different vibe, you know? Memphis is so bluesy and has such a really, like, its own character to it, you know? I wanted to grab onto that somehow, you know? Really do something cool there. And so we picked this action thriller thing that happens over the course of a couple of days. So it's one of those, like, person has to get from A to Z type of situations without getting harmed. So we're, you know, developing.
Everybody loves those.
Working on that and hoping that will be in the mix along the lines here. And this TV project that I'm working on with Renee is really cool. We shot a sizzle reel for it last year and we've just been developing the series. My mother, who's not in the industry, is the project Last Chance? Yes, yes.
Okay.
My mother actually started writing a book called
Mom's Got Skills.
I know, right? Who knew? But she was really, you know, telling me about this story and she's telling me as she's writing it and then she keeps putting it away and then she pulls it out again and then she puts it away. And this was going on for a while. And I said, oh, to heck with it. I'm stealing your story and I'm going to go make it into a TV series because it was such a cool story. And I just loved what she was doing. And I thought this is so perfect for television. You know, it's somewhere in between Law and Order and like NCIS, you know, like the action ensemble pieces that are out there and like the procedural dramas, I guess I should call them.
Nice. We need all the good nerdy series we can get.
You know, Renee came on board. We started talking about ideas, taking it up a notch and making it more edgy and more hipster, you know, like a little bit more young and kind of infusing this sort of young energy to it. We just started developing and we're still working on it. We're still fleshing it out and we're getting the script to where we need to get it to. And then we're really going to go guns a-blazing out there and this thing into the world.
That's great.
So I'm hoping, you know, we'll keep working on that this year and hoping we connect with the right people to get that done. But the sizzle reel we worked on with a great team.
Ooh, I want to see it.
Oh, yeah. It's out there. It's on YouTube and it's on...
Last chance, people. We'll look for it.
MorningPersonPictures.com. There you go.
Cool.
Yeah, I'm doing a web series, We Film LA, which is a web series interviewing talented women in the business. Like,
hey, we like that.
I love it because, you know, I literally started with like a handful of women, and, you know, like Renee was wonderful and Sharon was awesome to come in and let me interview them and sort of test the waters a little bit. But as I started to talk to other people, I'm in the Producers Guild. So I started talking to women in the Producers Guild.
Talking to smart women is a cool thing.
There you go. I mean,
it is.
You can't hurt yourself there. You gotta expanding that community. And there's such an amazing community out there of these incredibly talented women. Yeah.
Totally.
So, and I wanted to talk to these women. I mean, every time I sit down and they start sharing their stories, I mean, we could sit there for 5 hours and not miss a beat, you know?
Oh, I hope that flies high, you know?
Oh my God.
That's exciting.
And I learned so much from these women. And I mean, and it's every walk of life, you know? So from like Foley artists to producers, to writers, to cinematographers, to executive producers, to music supervisors. I mean, we tried
to... People love that. People have mentioned that to me about this show, that they like that I wasn't only trying to, you know, push the director thing. Of course, it's wonderful when women are able to be directors and producers, but there's a lot of work that are done on these films that are a lot of responsibility and a lot of work that are not those roles.
Yeah, yeah. It's really... It's a tough business, I think, out there for women, and we're trying to build it up. And not to play the women card, but it is important, you know, and I don't discount that. And I try to be aware of that when I'm putting a project together. It's almost second nature to me. I hire the people that are best suited for that particular film. I mean, every producer on The Usual was a woman. And pretty much, I would say probably 70% of my crew was women on The Usual. And that was not because I went out and sought women.
I didn't know that. Anything. That's far out.
But it just came together that way.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just what happened. When you look for the right people and you look at the resumes, you don't look at the gender of someone. And I don't necessarily, you know, if I feel like the right person for a job is a man, I'm going to hire a man for that particular job because that's who I want to work with in that particular, you know, the last couple of things I've shot, The Last Chance and We Film LA, my DP was Justin Janowitz, who's incredible. He and I have actually started producing together. We're working on a project now. He's great. I wouldn't have hired a woman just to say I hired a woman. You know, but I also, one of the second AC was a woman on one, you know, on this, on Last Chance, pretty much all my crew on Last Chance was women. I had a lot of, it was 50-50 at least of women. My line producer, UPM, Marina, amazing, Bulldog, pretty much a lot of my crew, most of my crew was women on Last Chance. We Film LA was basically me and Justin just running around with the camera filming people. So that's pretty 50-50. And, you know, in the films that I have lined up to do through Morning Person Pictures, I do want to do my best to be aware of making it as even, as equal as possible while still hiring the right people to do the jobs. And there are so many incredibly talented women. I think I met so many amazing people through We Film LA and doing those interviews. It sort of opened my eyes to, oh my gosh, I've got to work with this person now, and I've got to work with this person. And being invited to be a part of We Are Witty, which Marina Viscone runs or oversees, and she was kind enough to ask me to be a part of that. Again, meeting these incredible women, these talented women, and I'm expanding my community. And I feel like now I don't hesitate. It's like I can call up somebody, you know, one of these awesome women filmmakers and say, hey, can you come over? I need your help with this project or that project. That's changed over the years. You know, you and I talked about this a little bit. When I first moved
out
here,
it's powerful. It's totally powerful.
It is. You know, when I first moved out here, it wasn't that way. Women didn't support women in this business. It was very competitive. And I think there's still some of that competitiveness going on, but I know so many female directors and so many female producers that if I call them and I say, hey, I'm directing something or hey, I'm producing something, they're like, go get it, girl. Oh my gosh, I'm so proud of you. Let me know what you need. Let me know what I can do. Let me know what phone calls you need. Do you need this person? You need that person. I'll connect you. Yada, yada, yada. I mean, it just happens. And so I am so blessed. And again, you know, doing these interviews for We Film LA, every woman I interviewed was like, you got to talk to this woman. Oh my gosh, you're going to be blown away by this woman that I know or this girl I know. You got to talk to them. So it's a really incredible thing to see that community really going out there for each other and building up that diversity part of it.
And with all of your experience and all that you have done, what is your message for the world beyond the usual? What do you want to say to the globe in general about the business, just about working, just
It is a very tough business. You know, I've been doing this a long time. I've been doing this a while. It's a long haul. You have to dig in. You can't give up. I mean, if this is what you want, you have to decide this is what you want. And then you have to be tenacious. You've got to be open. You have to be true to yourself, but you also have to be flexible. Do what you love. Love what you do. It's that easy. It's that simple of a thing. But this is not an easy business, and it's going to push back on you every chance that it gets. So you got to be willing to push back, and you got to build your community. You have to have the support, especially as a woman in this business. You got to have that support. You have to have a support system. And I've been very fortunate. I've worked with amazing people, not, you know, not just women, not just men, and not just, you know, one type of person or another, like diversity across the gamut. I've had amazing support and amazing people that I've had the opportunity to work with. So I say learn, absorb, don't get egotistical about it. I think no matter how big you get, you're always going to want to learn. You're always going to want to absorb something from someone who does it a little different, or who maybe has a different system or a different way about them. But I feel like there's just always room to grow and to grow as a person. And I'm always looking for that. So I'm really grateful to my friends and my colleagues and the people that have supported me along the way. And I just continue to absorb and continue to learn and continue to grow and explore. And if one thing doesn't seem to be catching, I move on to another until that comes back around. But you have to stick with it.
Good for you. That was the endurance talk. I love that.
Yes.
I love it. I love it. So your main website is morningpersonpictures.com.
Yes.
And I'm going to put all of the other links and photos in the show notes on internationalwomeninfilm.com. And I want to thank you, Dawn. Hopefully we can get together soon. So much for your time on this, helping me tell all of these great stories that you and everybody else are telling on a much larger level. Just an amazing body of work.
Thank you for inviting me to the party. Thanks for inviting me to be a part of this and for the conversation.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Find us
bye-bye.
At internationalwomeninfilm.com. Find Michelle at Michelle Trainer on Twitter, Michele Trainer, or email IWIF@michellethetrainer.com. Find Michelle at michellethetrainer.com. That's michellethetrainer.com. And visit Michelle's blog at engineeringwellness.com. Thank you all for listening.